All rise in the courtroom and to those listening on stream, for the dishonorable badger is entering the scene. Apparently doing this as a day job simply was not enough, so let your jaws drop to the floor, 'cause we can't make this stuff up. Welcome back to the Legal Funhouse. We put the fun in dysfunctional. It's crazy in the Legal Funhouse, but weirdly educational. But every single one is remarkably true. One of them went to law school and is more than qualified to talk about the strangest cases from the strangest people alive. And the friend that he brought along barely passed eighth grade, whose legal experience lies within parking in the fire lane. Welcome back to the Legal Funhouse. We're just as confused as you. It's finally time for the Legal Funhouse, and without further ado, every single one is remarkably true. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Boozy's Legal Funhouse. I am your host, the Boozy Badger, and with me tonight, as always, is our certified legal layman, Alkali Bismuth. Say hi, Alkali.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're having a wonderful day, except for you, Ted.
Yeah, Ted. Fuck Ted.
Yeah, right?
Fuck Ted.
He's got a bunch of signs over in Rehoboth Beach about him.
He talks too much.
Oh, God.
They say that about him all the time. Ted talks.
I hate you.
Yeah, I know you do. It's been a little while since we've been back. And once again, I have a wonderful explanation for that. Alkali sucks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Alkali sucks.
Alkali and time zones suck.
Well, like this is actually the best one. The best excuse that I have ever fucking gotten. From here on out, once again, we're hoping episodes will be every 2 weeks. As always, as I say, while I am a comedian, Alkali does the comedy shit as a living because he's unemployed.
Yep.
And that means Alkali's on the road a lot. So the last time we're setting up to record, I'm like, oh, hey, are you cool on Monday? And he's like, no. And I'm like, oh, man, is something going on? He's like, I'm in Brazil. The fuck? Brazil?
You know what? Honestly, those were the best three words I've ever sent to a person. Like, this will piss them off.
Like, yeah, I remember. Why are you in Brazil? They flew me here to do comedy.
They flew me there to do comedy to a room full of people, half of whom could speak my language.
Yeah, I love that, by the way. Neither one of us speak Portuguese. A Brazilian convention flew the asshole from Chicago who doesn't... I mean... You barely speak English.
Barely.
You barely speak English. Flew him out to perform comedy in English for a Portuguese-speaking audience.
And it went spectacularly. And I will have you know, after being at their convention, I know why they flew me out. And it was not to do comedy. It was to get me drunk on Caparinas and leave me on a bridge on the beach while the tide came in. That was the best experience. You haven't lived until you are so enamored with the beauty of the open ocean in Brazil that you turn around and realize your path back to terra firma has flooded the fuck over. And everyone is standing out there cheersing ya. I had a fucking blast. I had a blast.
This sounds a lot to me like the Brazilians actively tried to kill you.
I was in Brazil. I'm sorry. That's like their national pastime.
I love
That's a joke. They were wonderful. I cannot stress how wonderful of a trip it was. And that is up to and including the people who could not speak my language, who were overjoyed to talk to me. We could not communicate. We had full body language conversations.
One of my favorite parts, by the way, of talking to Alkali while Alkali is in Brazil is I said, you know, dude, you've got to put in a word for me. And Alkali came back. And like, the thing is that wasn't the conversation we had originally started having. We had originally started having a conversation about how Alkali was enjoying the company of certain Brazilians.
It was a good party.
Very much enjoying their company. And I'm like, you know, you got to put in a good word for me at some point. And I was like, oh, you were a topic of conversation. I'm like, during?
Sometimes you need a breather. Yep. You need a breather, Boozy.
In the middle of it, they're like, oh, you must bring Boozy. I'm like, yeah, I'm flattered. I'm also a little scared.
You should be.
Oh, folks.
You're going to love it.
As always, before we get going too far tonight, I have to do the disclaimer. We do it every time. First, the first disclaimer, the most important disclaimer, is we do this shit live. This is recorded live, and it's available up on twitch.tv/boozybadger when we are recording, and there's an audience, and we enjoy doing it for the audience. And I looked at the audience, and the audience said, you're too close to your mic, which I'm assuming means I am too fucking loud, which brings up the second disclaimer. No second takes. I don't do second takes. Why? I hate audio editing. So if we fuck up, it's staying in. That's just how it is. If we fuck it up, it stays in. And what is ostensibly the most important disclaimer, Boozy's Legal Funhouse is an informational, educational, and hopefully entertaining look at the law as it exists through a study of case law with our certified legal layman. While I am an attorney, I am not your attorney. I burp every goddamn time right there. Just every
time. It's stress because you remember the $5.
Yeah. The way I would become your attorney is you come into my office, you sit down with me, you tell me your legal problem. I agree to represent you. You sign an engagement letter and you pay me a retainer of my choosing. However, I can't do any of those things because I don't accept private clients. So the way you get a lawyer is you do all that with a licensed attorney in your jurisdiction. You can't just PayPal me a buck and say I'm your lawyer. It doesn't work like that. Everything you're going to hear tonight is not legal advice. I am not your attorney. No attorney-client relationship exists, and no attorney-client privilege does attach. Please, for the love of God, whatever you do, do not go into court and say a fat guy who acts like a cartoon badger on the internet told me this. It will not work out well for you. That said, holy shit, the last one of these we did was Anthrocon.
Yeah. Anthrocon. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that was it's a fun lot of fun. It's fun to do
these in front of a live audience.
Yeah. Jesus. And they were so receptive to everything. That's what got me.
It's a different form of panel, man. There is a lot of information you throw out there. I genuinely enjoy doing this because I am learning the wrong way to break the law.
Now, if you didn't listen, the Anthrocon one was all about sovereign immunity. And it was sovereign immunity in a manner that I knew would piss Alkali off the most. I used court cases that don't mean shit from the special court the government made to decide whether or not you could sue the government. Regarding corpses, literally everything we've established, Alkali hates. If you haven't given a listen, I suggest you do it now. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. You can't come for the king. That is our live at Anthrocon. And the best part of it was I found a new way to anger Alkali at the end of it. Because the case...
Yeah, you need more of those.
The case didn't go to trial. It settled. It went back and ended in a settlement. And Alkali's like, you chose a fucking settlement for Anthrocon? Like, you don't even get to give us a nice, warm ending on this one of what happened? It's like, what happened? Oh, they sent the case back. And then what happened? It's settled.
Boozy, performer first. You end on the laugh. How could you? How could you?
Before we get too far in tonight, and before we really get rolling, I do need to read off the names of our Patreon supporters here at the Legal Funhouse at the $5 level and above. So a special thank you to Tezcat Magic Jag, Waylon DeRoche, Beaton, Dozer Trash Panda, Mama T, Uncle Kage, David Hunter, Evelyn Klein, Lufus the Raccoon, Netherlinks, Pandemonium, Petrov Neutrino, Andy, Buddy Goodboy, CC Otter, Chroma Hydra, Dragor, Eddie the Weather Fox, Flat Facts, Floofy Foxers, Ghost Goat, Grace Jane Gollinger, Hade Foxen, Jason Knight, Julie Esslinger, Jess James, Lack, Leon Dashwood, Lorraine Poirier, Mark Whipple, Michael Blocker, Nikolai, Otto Poom, Red Fox, Rune Dog, Scuba Fox, Serathan, Silver, Tekel, The Dragon Show, Tiny Voices, Tyron, and Ziggy. By the way, loving how our Patreon is going because I just enjoy being like Floofy Foxers, Lorraine. If you want to be one of those wonderful people, you can do that over at patreon.com/lawyersandliquor. You can also support the show over at paypal.me/lawyersandliquor, I think.
Sounds right.
Yeah, something like that. Or go to boozybadger.com. All right. Are you ready?
Absolutely. I was born something.
Well, I've got a special treat tonight.
Oh, good.
I have a special treat. You may remember several episodes ago, one of our Patreon supporters suggested that we find a lawsuit about foxes.
I have a feeling I know who that was. Continue.
We have found a lawsuit about foxes.
We have a fox lawsuit?
We have a fox
lawsuit. Hold on. I swear to Christ, if this is about the news organization,
nope.
I'm
it is not about laugh. The honest to God, actual foxes.
Actual foxes.
Actual foxes.
Oh, this is the fluffiest cast ever. I'm ready.
And cocks.
This is the fluffiest cast ever. I'm ready.
Foxes and cocks. That's what we're doing today.
Foxes and coxes.
Foxes and coxes.
All right. Well, we have the name of the episode.
Actually, I named the episode Fox in the Hen House, but we're going to change it now. It's going to be Boozy's Legal Funhouse, Foxes and Coxes. Just because
that's
of that.
That's the sign of a truly good podcast, changing the names of their episode.
In the middle of the episode. Right in the middle of the episode. Just fuck it. Changing the name. Alkali came up with a banger. That's what we're doing now.
Oh, my God.
But before we get into that, I know how much you love the legal news segment, and I know how much you love the government deciding that they can just do whatever the fuck they want.
Oh, always a favorite thing for all Americans.
And, you know, the court reins that in. Because the court looks at what the government says they can and can't do and decides whether or not it's legal to do that.
Absolutely. Okay. Checks and balances, social studies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Checks and balances. You know, the Supreme Court checks the legislature, which checks the executive, and they both, and you know, the executive appoints the Supreme Court, and the legislature gets to pass laws regarding the courts and confirm them. It's checks and balances the whole way down, right?
Hashtag Illuminati. Absolutely. Yep.
That's why the legislature, Congress, has set a judicial code of ethics for the federal judiciary because of that. Okay. Checks and balances. They get to do that. They can say this is the code of judicial ethics for all federal judges.
Okay.
Except the Supreme Court of the United States.
Good for them.
They were excluded from that. And we covered this briefly a couple episodes ago when we talked about some ethics concerns with the Supreme Court, right?
Right, okay.
I am happy to announce that Congress has now started exploring the possibility of maybe making the United States Supreme Court beholden to ethical guidelines.
Oh!
And the court's taking it very, very well.
I don't believe you for a second.
Yeah, Justice Samuel Alito is taking it so well that last week he released a statement that said he's not really sure Congress has the constitutional authority to do anything about the Supreme Court's ethics.
This is going to be my favorite news story. Mom and Dad are fighting? Oh, good.
The United States Supreme Court has said, well, you can try to impose ethical requirements on us, like Alito at least, like not the whole court. because he's like, nobody else has come out and publicly said anything. So I'm not going to, like, he was asked, what do the other justices think about this opinion? He's like, well, they haven't said anything publicly, so I'm not going to out them.
Smart.
But what he basically said was, if Congress tries to pass a law against us, in my opinion, we can strike it down as being unconstitutional. We don't think they have the authority to govern us.
Oh, this is going to be fun. Sweet. Maybe they'll stop talking about aliens for a few minutes.
So I want to point out, by the way, you were pissed that you found out the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has a court specifically deciding whether or not you can sue the government.
Yeah.
And Justice Alito is coming out saying, well, you can pass whatever laws you want, but we can just declare them unconstitutional.
This, I am genuinely excited to watch the pissing contest between the highest court and the senators.
And, you know,
tell me that doesn't sound like a basketball game in the making. The highest court versus the senators. The senators have the ball. They're running down guard. Oh, they've slapped an injunction on the senators.
The fucking Harlem.
5-yard penalty. I don't know sports. Touchdown.
The Harlem judiciary just comes out there, starts spinning the Constitution on their finger, and it's a 3-pointer.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. The executive branch would have to be the Washington Generals. Right? They suck at this.
Right? They can't do anything. They can't pass a law. They can't do anything.
Can we play the Harlem Globetrotters theme over all judicial settlements from this point forward?
I would be perfectly fine with, like, hey, here's your 2024 Supreme Court opinions, and fucking Sweet Georgia Brown starts playing.
Yes!
It's called The Name of That is Sweet Georgia Brown.
I did not know that.
Yeah, there's actually, and if you ever really want to, you know, you can learn the words in Polish.
Wait, what?
Yeah, there's a Mel Brooks movie called To Be or Not to Be.
Not to Be. Holy shit, dude.
The song they're singing at the opening of To Be or Not to Be in Polish is Sweet Georgia Brown.
I did not know that. Yeah. That's awesome. Dude, yeah. I love Mel Brooks. He's great. Oh,
so yeah, the government just...
All chairs all the way.
Government has taken the decision, or Leo has at least, that they can just make their own rules. And he's basing that off of the fact that the Constitution of the United States does not give Congress the explicit power to control the court.
See, I don't know how to feel about this one because I genuinely hate our Congress, but there should be, that's the balance.
Well, it's all a question of statutory interpretation.
Yeah.
You know, if the Constitution doesn't explicitly give Congress that power, does Congress have that power? And the argument can be very simply, that our Constitution is kind of a negative Constitution. Like, it's less telling us what Congress can do and more telling us what they can't do. And if a power is not granted to Congress, like, there's an amendment that says that anything not, you know, specifically granted to the federal government is reserved to the states and things like that.
Okay.
And the way we get a lot of these far-reaching federal laws is they read more power in, like the Commerce Clause. You know, Congress shall have the authority to make laws regulating commerce between the several states, right?
Okay.
Now you hear that and you're like, okay, so they get to, like, govern trade between the states.
Right.
But the Commerce Clause was one of the underpinnings of the Civil Rights Act. It's one of the ways that Congress found the authority. Why? Because denying accommodations and things like that affected commerce between the states.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
And that's called the Dormant Commerce Clause. It's not explicitly stated they can do that. But in a way, if you're going to give them the power to regulate commerce, well, doesn't that mean they can regulate all commerce and things that touch on commerce? And that's the real thing with the interpretations of the Constitution.
Right.
There's, like, the textualist reading, which is, nope, we're not going to read anything more than what the text says. And originalists, you know, what did the founders intend? And then there's the living Constitution.
Yeah, but I'm not so sure if I'm cool with the people entrusted to watch over the Constitution be like, oh, no, 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 you can't tell us what to do. It's in the Constitution.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if that's I'm super cool with that.
Well, and that's the thing, though, because that's where you get this whole big thing. Like, most conservatives are originalists and textualists, meaning if it doesn't say this, we get to say, no, it wasn't in there. The federal government doesn't have that power. Most liberal justices are more in line with the living Constitution, which is, you know, we don't read it in the context of when it was written in 1789. We read it with a practical application of those principles to reality as it exists now. Like, we assume that it will evolve. The meaning can evolve over time. And you can probably see why that's not the favorite opinion of most conservative judges, because that means that social factors influence the Constitution, whereas the conservative judges are like, nope, the old dead white men never would have meant that.
And you gotta respect the old dead white
men. Right? Like, yeah.
It's
all a game, is what it comes down to for them, which is they use it however they want to justify whatever ends they want to reach.
But yeah,
that's the thing with interpretation, is you argue for an interpretation, and that happens all the time in law. Like in our first case tonight.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this is not the Fox case, by the way. This is the Cock case.
Oh, you got it. Now we solved the question. What came first, the fox or the cock?
Well, it's always the cock came first, then the fox comes. just ask anybody at a furry convention.
Yeah, I know.
So, do you remember a while back I was telling you about in rem jurisdiction and in personam jurisdiction, the difference between bringing a lawsuit against a piece of property and bringing a lawsuit against a person? Both of our cases tonight are in rem cases.
Okay, and we're bringing against the property.
We're bringing it against a piece of property.
Okay.
All right. And in both of our cases tonight, the plaintiff, the person bringing the lawsuit, is the United States government.
Well, good for them. I'm glad their suing trigger finger hasn't got rusty.
So let's go back. Let's go back to the 50s and the 60s.
Got it.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, I'm already liking this one. All right, what are we doing?
There is
craps.
There is a guy named Dick Graves.
I thought we weren't doing corpses this week. Yeah.
Like, Dick Graves sounds like it's a necrophilia thing, right?
Right.
Right. Like, yeah, and Dick Graves. Dick Graves was not a necrophile.
I'm so glad that we're starting off with that. Yeah.
Dick Graves, if you are a descendant of Richard L. Graves of Sparks, Nevada, I am not calling your ancestor a necrophile. He may have been. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the man. I get the feeling that Dick Graves was more of like the Colonel Sanders of Nevada.
The Colonel Sanders of...
Yeah, like he was the gambling Colonel Sanders.
Nice. All right.
I'm already the reason I say guy. That he was very obviously the gambling Colonel Sanders of Nevada is he owned a casino. You want to guess the casino's name? Hold on. I have to fix an audio fuck up.
Oh, no. Those are my favorite.
Let me fix the audio fuck up. Now that the audio fuck up decided to happen, can you hear me now?
I got you.
All right.
That's okay. Our last show, the top of Zan's microphone, the whole stand literally came off in our hand. So, the whole stand.
So Dick Graves owns a casino in Sparks, Nevada. Do you want to know the name of the casino?
Jesus Christ, the Dead Dick Casino.
No, nope. It's a very...
Corpse Craps. No. Is it Corpse Crap?
Dick was amazingly original.
Oh, really?
Yeah, amazingly original.
Just Dick's Casino, because I think I saw that on Grindr.
Dick Graves Nugget Casino.
He didn't need the nugget. That has ruined the whole premise of Dick Graves Casino.
Man, literally, it's just like, I'm going to open a casino. I'm going to name it after me. We're going to throw the word nugget in there.
Well, God, so close. So close, Mr. Dick Graves.
Now, Dick, in his casino, runs a dining room. It's a nice casino. It's got a restaurant. It's got a nice dining room that serves fried chicken.
All right, he is the Colonel Sanders. All right, okay.
So this is Dick Graves Nugget Casino Chicken.
Tell me they serve chicken nuggets. At least then the name makes sense.
I assume they do. However, where you're eating in Dick Graves Nugget Casino, when you order your fried chicken, is
in the gold mine.
No, the Golden Rooster Room.
All right, so now come on. Come on, he's got a golden cock room in the Dick Graves Casino. He knew he didn't need the nugget. The nugget ruins everything.
So,
God damn it, you Dick Graves.
Dick opens the casino. He opens the dining room. He wants to draw people in, and he decides that the best way to draw people in the center of the room, he's going to have a giant golden cock.
I need to gamble here.
A solid gold rooster in the middle.
Tell me there's a slot machine in it, and when you win, it just shoots your coins out of the top.
Oh, no. It is.
There's going to be a golden shower. Come on.
It is art. So Dick goes to Newman Silver Shop in Reno and says, hey, could you make a cock for me? Right? So Newman's carves this wooden model of this giant cock. Say this will be the model we use for it. And then Newman's is tasked with creating the golden cock. However,
amazing.
There's an issue.
Okay.
All right. It is the late 1950s, early 1960s.
You're going to tell me they're not zoned for cock. I'm just.
No, they're not zoned for gold.
What?
In the 30s, Franklin Roosevelt passed what was known as the Gold Act.
They weren't allowed?
The Gold Act banned private ownership of gold for United States citizens.
You're fucking with me.
No.
What about all that gold in them there hills?
It was a way to protect the dollar, the value of the dollar on that. Private citizens could not own over a small amount of gold. And Dick's out here saying, well, I want a rooster made of solid gold. Which goes well over the amount. Now, Newman's has a license from the U.S. Mint to create gold bars, I think like up to 50 troy ounces of gold. All right?
Okay.
Now, they're estimating that this golden cock's going to be like 200-something troy ounces of gold.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So Newman's writes to the Department of the Mint. All right? And the director of the U.S. Mint comes back and says, and they're saying like, hey, can we get a temporary increase on our license to cast gold up to a certain amount, right? Newman's okay. And Graves, Newman's and Dick here, write to the U.S. Mint. The director of the U.S. Mint responds and says, no. No, you can't. And why do they say you can't? Because the Gold Act has like a certain exception in it. The first is it is for fabricated gold. Okay. And that's taking gold and making it into things.
Okay.
Like computer chips and watches and stuff like that. Fabricated gold. Gold that has been processed or manufactured, turned into something. That's legal to a certain amount. Like that's exempt from the Gold Act. You can have a gold watch. You can have gold used and stuff. it had, and that's determined as fabricated gold. So what are the requirements for fabricated gold? Number one, the value of the gold in the piece cannot be more than 90% of the value of the total piece.
Okay.
All right. So like if you have a computer chip and without gold, the computer chip sells for $100 and with gold, it sells for like $200, you're probably okay because, you know, 50% of the value is the gold.
Right.
All right. The second is it's the fabrication, making it into something is in good faith, is not for the purpose of evading or enabling others to evade the ban on private ownership of gold or the regulations, and has been processed or manufactured for someone or more specific and customary industrial, professional, or artistic uses.
Okay. Right.
So the director of the U.S. Mint in Washington, D.C. says, your giant golden cock is not going to meet these requirements. Therefore, we are denying you the ability to make something over 50 troy ounces. So Newman's in Reno goes back to Dick and says, hey, Dick, we can't make your cock.
The right. government stepped in and stopped the gay community from having its idol. How dare they?
Now, Dick is persistent. He is a persistent little dick. All right. Dick goes away from Reno and Newman's, which had that 50 troy ounce unit, and contacts a company called Shreve & Company of San Francisco. He tells Shreve & Company, hey, I went to Newman's. Newman's couldn't get a license to cast over 50 troy ounces. And Shreve's is like, hey, you know what? That's not a problem because we're already licensed to cast gold up to 300 ounces. Okay. We can make your cock. Right?
There we go. We got a cock.
So Shreve's contacts like the Mint in San Francisco. All right. I love the name of this, by the way. The director of Shreve's, J.C. Hickenbottom Jr.
Oh, good old Hickenbottom.
Writes to the director of the San Francisco Mint asking for permission to make the rooster. Arthur C. Carmichael, who was the superintendent of the San Francisco Mint, looks at it and is like, yeah, sure, that's fine. You can make the rooster. Now, why'd they have to ask permission?
Because it's going to an individual owner.
Correct. And the fabricated gold thing, it doesn't matter what the weight is. The fabricated gold thing applies to everything. All right?
Okay.
Like, if Newman's had been given that license, or if Newman's could have cast up 300, Newman's probably still would have asked for permission. Because it's not a bar on the amount. The main reason Newman's asked for the license, the ability to go up to 300, was because they were limited by the Mint to only like making gold of 50 troy ounces or more. Shreve's okay. is like, okay, we can go higher, but you still can't privately own gold unless it meets these requirements.
Right.
All right. Now, there's some conflict as to whether or not Graves told Shreve's, the director of the U.S. Mint, like the guy in D.C. who runs all the mints, had already said, yeah, you can't do that. It doesn't meet customary and artistic uses of this. It's fabricated. It's not fabricated gold, and it's illegal. All right.
Okay.
However, the San Francisco Mint says okay, and Shreve's goes, okay, we'll do it. They make the giant golden cock. All right.
Perfect.
They make the cock, and it is immediately seized by the United States government.
They seized their cock?
Immediately.
They got their grip onto that giant cock?
The U.S. government said, that is an illegal cock.
Those strokes.
And went in and grabbed that cock. And it was impounded by the government, pending the result of this lawsuit. This lawsuit being, and you'll love the name, United States of America versus one solid gold object in the form of a rooster.
They could have made it better, and they know it.
This was a United States District Court of Nevada case. The site is 208 FSUP, which is Federal Supplement, 99-1962.
Now, you know what? That does make more sense to me now. They had to name it that.
They had to name it that. Exactly.
They needed to keep the U.S. versus Koch for gay rights. I understand. That one's coming up. We're waiting on it.
Which actually, by the way, is a wonderful thing with all of these cases where the government's trying to seize property in REM, because the name of the lawsuit is the United States of America versus whatever property they're trying to seize. Like, there's one out there. It's like United States of America versus 290 cases of ping pong balls. Not a joke. There's one out there like that. So why does the government think they can seize the cock?
I'm going to say, you know what? Yeah, no, I got it. Because they are undervaluing art. Unlike me, who can truly appreciate cock, they're saying it's not 90%. The worth of the thing is not 90%.
Nope.
That gold is more than 90%.
That is not even really argued in front of the jury.
Really?
Yeah.
What the hell are they arguing?
It's argued a little bit, but not a lot. Their main argument, because it's a two-part test, it's got to be the value of the gold in the object cannot be more than 90% of the total value of the object.
Right. So that's what I thought they were going to hit them with.
And it has to be in good faith. You know, you can't just be trying to get around the act that says you can't own gold.
He's not doing that. He's building a cock.
And it has to be a customary use.
Screw you.
Now, here's customary. The question. Customary in art, technology, things like that. Is making a statue of something a customary artistic endeavor?
Absolutely.
Right. So why is the government suing?
Because it's a cock?
Let me read the statute again.
Okay.
Because the statute's wording is there. Has in good faith and not for the purpose of evading or enabling others to evade the provisions of the acts, the orders, or the regulations of this part been processed or manufactured for someone or more specific and customary industrial, professional, or artistic uses?
I mean, it sounds like they got it because it is an artistic use. Are you saying it's tax evasion because it's in a casino?
Nobody even argues it's not an artistic use. Everybody agrees that the cock, the giant golden cock, is an object of art.
Okay, well then then the good faith? Are they making fun of gold? Is that what they're saying? Like, what else do they got?
Customary.
Oh, come on.
Is it customary? Is making a statue a customary form of art?
Maybe not out of pure gold.
That's their argument. It's not a customary use of gold.
A pure gold statue. So they're not arguing the statue thing. They're saying you don't make statues out of gold. You make them out of stone.
The government argues that it's not a customary use, so it doesn't fall under the fabricated gold exception to the bar on people owning gold because of, one, the size of the rooster, two, the fact it was made for solid gold, and three, that it was used for advertising and exhibition purposes. All right.
Oh, so it was because it was a casino, kind of.
Yeah, like the government actually is like, by the way, it's not really art because the reason they made a rooster out of solid gold was to advertise. All right. Now,
all right.
How does the court come down, though? How's the court come down? Like, because the court's got this guy sitting here. Dick Graves is sitting here going, no, it's fine. It's a fabricated gold use. And the government's coming back saying, no, it's not, because it's not a customary artistic use.
I mean, it's art, so I gotta say that he should win this one. And on the other hand, what is the government going to do with a giant statue of a rooster? You can't melt that down. The people at the Killiness and Melt would be scarred for life.
The government,
a melting gold rooster?
The government argues that there is not a customary use of gold to make it into a solid gold rooster. A solid gold rooster is not a customary artistic use of gold, and therefore it doesn't fall under it. Meanwhile, Graves' argument is customary goes into the completed object, the rooster itself. Is making a statue of an animal a customary artistic thing? Not a customary use of gold, but a customary artistic.
We've got lions out in front of the Museum of Science and Industry. Of course, making busts like that is very customary.
So what does the court look at? The court looks at where the word customary appears.
Oh, Jesus, you're kidding me. Okay, where does it appear?
The court states...
If you say Beowulf, I'm leaving.
The court states that the word customary, the placement of the word customary in that statute, obviously is meant to modify the word's artistic use, not customary modifying the word gold. So the government actually loses on this one, because the court says if we take the government's interpretation, then what we are looking at is the statute means a customary use of gold.
Oh, I had you backwards there. Oh, sweet. Good for him. He got his big cock.
Right? But the court comes back. Like I said, the court says it's not a customary use of gold. It's a customary use of the finished product. Is the finished product, is the rooster, is making that statue a customary artistic use? And if so, then you can use the gold in it. All right? The example, I love it, because the government says that it would have to be a legitimate and customary use of gold in the industry. And the court's like, yeah, but we can't do that, because then what you're saying is nobody can ever use gold in a way that it hasn't already been used.
Yeah.
Right. The next thing, and I love this, is the government argues, well, if you say that he can make a rooster out of solid gold and it's okay, what's to stop somebody from making a cow out of solid gold?
I'm pretty sure Chicago did that. I'm fairly certain.
But here's a cow out of solid gold. That's biblical.
That's an idol.
That's biblical, the golden calf.
That's the title, yeah.
That's the golden calf. So the court just basically comes back and says, no, you can't seize this guy's golden cock. Like, you're not allowed to. It falls within the exception here, because it is actually a customary artistic thing to make statues of animals, even for advertising purposes. And the word customary doesn't modify the gold. It's not a customary use of gold. It's a customary artistic thing.
Yeah, agreed.
Right?
Yay, and golden cock.
They look at all that. It's the way they look at it is saying it should be permitted for golden objects as a customary industrial, professional, or artistic use, not a customary use of gold in industry, professions, or art.
Love it.
So do you see the difference there?
I love that they could come up with, I like that, because it had me at the beginning too. I was looking at them both at the same time, but no, I like that they actually just went back to, no, customary art, ass.
And that's the amazing thing. That's what makes statutory interpretation so interesting, right?
No, that's cool as shit.
Right? So Dick Graves gets his 200-pound golden cock.
I'm so happy.
Right? And the court,
where is that now? Who has that?
No idea. I have no idea where Dick Graves' golden cock is.
It's going to show up in a...
Oh, actually, wait, no, I do. I absolutely can tell you
where Dick Graves' golden cock is. I don't know who has it, but in 2013, Dick Graves Casino was sold. And the new owners then sold the golden cock at auction in 2014.
That had to be a riot. That's great.
It sold for $234,000. Now, what I love, though, is because we were talking about that 90%. The item can't be over 90% of the value. Like the gold can't make up 90% or more of the value of the item, right?
Right.
And, you know, the government's like, well, the government argues that if we hold that you can use gold for making a 206-pound troy ounce golden cock, then somebody can make a 200-pound golden steer, right?
Yeah.
But the court comes back and they're like, well, yeah, except there's that other argument here, which is the 90% of the value can't, over 90% of the value can't come from the gold. And we would argue that if somebody made a 200-pound golden, solid gold steer, probably more than 90% of the value is the gold.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love this. And I then, love this.
Hold on. This is wonderful because they go into detail about this hypothetical golden steer. Like the court comes back and is like, by the way, even though we're saying that it would probably fall afoul of this over 90% thing, we can imagine situations where the 200-pound golden cow may not fall afoul of it. Like, it could be really minute workmanship and the manufacturing costs rise above 10% and the artistic value could be high. Like, they're going into detail. They spend a paragraph going into detail about how the golden cow could actually not fall afoul of it. But they even start by saying, that's not to say under no circumstances could a 200-pound golden steer fall within the provisions of this section, the section allowing the private ownership of gold.
Oh my God. Well, I know what this means. I'm going to follow their instructions to the letter, and next year I will have a golden steed outside my front door.
Now here's a question, though. That act right there, the Gold Reserve Act that they had, all right, what would have happened if the government had won?
Actually, just judging by what you said, it sounds like all artistic use of gold would have stopped and the government would have maintained pretty much full possession of it.
Well, it wouldn't have been all artistic use of gold. I mean, yeah, there's always times that gold's traditionally used in art, right?
True. Okay.
Well, and let's be
that, to me, it really kind of stems the flow of creativity. Like, I've seen some pretty wild art out there. Modern art's pretty cool.
What would have been more immediately in this case? Had the government won, what would have happened to Dick's golden cock?
I'm assuming melted it down and scarred someone for life. I went over that.
The government would have seized it.
Right.
The government would have melted down the cock, and the government would have put the cock with the rest of the nation's gold.
Yeah.
In Fort Knox.
Oh Jesus.
And Christ. That's actually mentioned, that would have been the outcome of that lawsuit had the government won.
And that's starting to become the government suing and just seizing gold all over the place.
Now, that act obviously was significantly loosened in later years, partially because the United States is no longer on the gold standard.
Right.
At the time, that act was necessary to keep people from hoarding gold, to make sure there was gold in the mint, in the treasury, that could be used to back our currency. And they ended up loosening that over the years. But that is just the first example of statutory interpretation in these. Because had the government said, no, it's a customary use of gold, and we don't think making a golden cock for your fried chicken restaurant in your casino is a customary use of gold.
I think it is, but continue.
But it's all about statutory interpretation. It comes down to looking at what does the law say and how do we interpret that. And it can be as little as where is that word in the sentence? Like the use
that
of,
is really cool that you guys can do all that. I love that.
If that statute had been written slightly differently, had that statute been written to say a customary use of gold in, rather than use of gold in a customary standard or a customary manner, it all looked at what word, what phrase was the word customary modifying. If customary modifies gold, then yeah, the court would have come back and said customary use of gold. The gold's being modified. So even if it is artistic, even if it is a customary artistic practice, it's not a customary use of gold.
That's so cool. I love that the little details like that can have such a huge impact.
And right? that's how statutory interpretation works, though. We have things in law that we call like the million-dollar comma. And
the million. Okay, hold on. It's got to be what? Somebody wrote something, put the comma in the wrong place, and then the lawsuit cost them $1 million. But yes.
Yeah. Yeah! There actually that was right. one for, it was about, I believe, truck drivers not too long ago. Where if it had said comma and, like blank and loading time, or like loading and waiting time, they were getting paid for. And loading and waiting. But if there had been a comma in there, it would have changed the meaning. It would have been loading, comma, and waiting. But loading and waiting merged the two together. And because of that comma, the contract was interpreted to mean more time that had to be paid than it would have been had that comma not been there.
Oh, shit.
And that's how minute it can get in statutory and in contract interpretation.
That's wild. I love that. I love that.
And you sort of see this in the next case, because this is the Fox case.
Yay, foxes.
This is the one that I have been going on and saying, okay, we actually have to do it. This case is actually out of Washington State. It's a 1924 case. All right. The site is 1F2D 933 from the Western District of Washington. And the name of the case is United States of America versus 24 live silver black foxes.
Oh, no. We're getting back into the church times where they're suing the animals.
All right. So, it's December 17th, 1923. All right. 24 live silver black foxes are imported into the United States of America. All right.
Okay.
On March 4th, 1924, the foxes are seized by customs agents at Seattle. Why? Because there is a live animals import act that states there are supposed to be certain taxes and tariffs paid on the importing of certain types of live animals, which include these foxes. And
okay.
The invoice on this, the customs invoice, this is what's in this crate or whatever, right? All right. Lied about what was in the crate. Did not say silver black foxes. And lied about the value of the contents. So the customs agent seizes it.
Okay.
It's held in the customs agent's possession by seizure on that.
And the customs agent, so he just took them all home? He's got 24 new pets?
Yeah. Well,
adorable.
They take them home, and yeah. Yeah. What? You know, they're seized there. They're in that. Then the vixens that are in the crates have 20 pups.
Oh, God.
So there are now 44 live silver black foxes.
I'm glad that the government wasn't suing the babies. That's nice. That's a step in the right direction.
So on July 17th, 1924, the U.S. Marshals show up, and the U.S. Marshals seize the foxes, seize the 20 pups, and levy upon them, which is basically, you know, we're holding them, we're seizing them, all right?
Okay.
Because you ship them in under a fraudulent invoice, you have violated the law, we're holding them. Now, okay. In that situation, what will happen is the owner of it, the owner or of the crate and all that, can fix it. Like, they can post a bond for the increased value or the taxes, or they can pay it to get it released or stuff like that. All right.
Okay.
That's the whole idea of it. It's not, we're going to keep your shit forever. It's, you'll either post a bond or you'll pay what you should have paid had you not fucking lied to us, plus the penalty, and then we'll give you your property.
Right.
All right. Unless it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon.
Okay.
So the U.S. Marshals have right then 24 live silver black foxes and 20 pups. So 44 silver black foxes in their possession. And they look around and they go, well, shit, we don't have the facilities to actually care for these.
Yeah, exactly.
And the owner has not been forthcoming and posting bond or paying for them. So we got to get rid of them. But how do you get rid of them? You sell them. But you can't just sell somebody else's property if it's on levy and being held. You have to say the government should be able to take possession of these foxes because of this violation, because of this thing here about the import of animals, and we should be able to sell them. It's because to do otherwise is going to create waste, deterioration, or a hazard in the keeping of them.
Agreed, yeah.
So the United States goes to the court and files a petition saying, you know, we want permission to either sell these foxes to prevent waste, deterioration, and hazards, or we want the court to order the guy who brought them in, who shipped them, to pay us $850 for their care and custody until this matter is resolved.
Okay.
All right. The plaintiff doesn't. Like the plaintiff doesn't do it. Plaintiff's like, no, fuck you. I'm not paying you $850 for my live foxes that I fraudulently tried to ship into the U.S. All right. Now, remember, all of this is done because of the Tariff Act of 1922 and a live animal shipping, all right, that says that when you're shipping in animals, there should be levied, collected, and paid the rates of duty for live animals of 15% ad valorem. All right.
Okay.
And like when they come into the country, live animals at 15% ad valorem must be paid. And that's a tax. Ad valorem is like a value tax.
Okay.
Like you got to pay 15% of the value is what it's getting at here. So what they're saying is give us $850 for their care and custody until we've resolved everything about fines and ad valorems and all that.
Okay.
Or court, let us sell them, and then we'll settle up with this guy after we've taken out our tax and we'll give him the rest of it, if there's anything left, mm-hmm. which there almost never is anything left.
Right.
Do you know what the conflict's about? Now, the court very first denies the sale of the foxes and the whelps.
They deny the sale.
The guy won't pay for them.
But they denied the sale.
But the United States says you cannot sell these animals.
Is it because they were exotic animals? They didn't want what? Why weren't they letting them sell them?
They're allowed to ask for the sale because of waste or deterioration. Correct.
Right.
All right. The very first thing the court says is, what is waste or deterioration? Isn't life constantly in a state of waste?
Okay.
Like, that's the very first, like, no shit. Like, what is a live animal? Life is said to be a state in which energy of function is ever resisting decay and dissolution and commences for many legal purposes. I mean, it goes into this.
Oh my God. Did they try to define life?
Yeah. So they're like, first of all, You can't sell the foxes. We're going to deny that because waste and deterioration, that's just a thing that happens in life. But more specifically, they say you can't sell the pups.
You can't sell the... Because if he would have gotten it, those pups would have been born in his care?
No. No. I want you to guess a little bit because you're going to love this answer.
Is it because the pups were born in the care of the U.S.?
Nope.
Because the pups weren't import. Oh, my God. Does it have to do with the fact that the pups weren't imported at all? They were born, so no one has rights to them?
It's an ad valorem tax for the import of live animals.
Okay. The pups weren't live when they...
The pups weren't... The court says, for legal purposes, life will begin at quickening, which is... Quickening is the moment that you can exist outside of the womb.
Okay.
And that's actually been a law for a long time. Like, we talk about it now, but like at common law, that was the determination of when life began, when somebody could live outside of the womb or when you can hear a heartbeat or things like that. And it's been altered over time, but the court came back and said, all right, so for a person, life begins at quickening. And I shit you not, they go to what is a live animal? Unless the whelps bore some relation to life at the time of entry, I cannot conceive how they would come within the provisions of the section. Can we, by analogy of the status of man, determine the status of the whelps or pups? Life is said to be a state in which energy of function is ever resisting decay and dissolution and commences for many legal purposes at the period of quickening. Physiology defines life as existing from the period of conception. For many purposes, the law concedes to physiology for the fact that life commences at conception in ventre sa mère and is life for all beneficial purposes. But to create a civil right status, a child must be born. The circulating system must be changed, and the child must have an independent circulation. The umbilical cord, however, need not be severed. A civil right is a privilege accorded to an individual, a right due from one to another, and trespassing upon which may be redressed in civil action. The whelps were born after the vixens were seized. Being entered December 17, 1923, the vixens could not have been mated at that time since the gestation period is 51 or 52 days. The forfeiture dating from the date of entry, the whelps had no relation to life at the time the vixens were entered. From any viewpoint or approach, it is apparent that the whelps, at the time of entry of the vixens, could not have had the status of live animals and therefore cannot be held to be within the provisions of the Tariff Act.
Oh my God, I love it!
They can't prove. They go into, the court goes in to this discussion about, when does life begin? Does life begin at conception? Does life begin at heartbeat? Does it only begin at birth? Legally, there are many answers. However, foxes are born 52 days after fucking.
There we go. And that's what we needed.
And these foxes were born more than 52 days after they were entered into the U.S. and seized by customs. Therefore, when they came into the United States, they were not live animals. And the act only regulates the ad valorem seizure and sale of live animals.
Love it.
So,
love it.
You can't sell the 24 silver black foxes that you lied to get into the country because they're not really wasting away. Life is a constant state of waste and decay. And you can't sell their pups either. You can't sell their pups because there's absolutely no way they were conceived before they came into the United States. We can have a philosophical discussion about what it means to be legally alive. But in any case, they were born 52 days after they were seized, so it doesn't matter. There's no way that we could be considering them live animals when they were imported, and the statute only applies the tax to live animals.
Love it. Love it. That's great.
I mean, I love it. Like, it goes into, like, the whelps were born after the vixens were seized on the 4th of March. Being entered December 17th, 1923, the vixens could not have been mated at that time. Like, it goes into a discussion of fox gestational periods and everything.
Like, no, I did the math. They fucked here.
Oh, no, they didn't even have to do the math. Like, the court looked up a Department of Agriculture bulletin to get the gestational period of live silver black foxes.
Love it.
But that because if it had said the importation of animals, maybe there'd be an argument. But would that really have changed it? But the addition of the word live animals.
So one word again. I love that.
One word. And here's a question for you. All right. 51, 52 days. Obviously, when you look at the math, it doesn't matter. The foxes were conceived and everything in the U.S. They had to have been because they were seized by customs on December 17th, and the whelps were born after they were seized on March 4th. All right?
Okay.
So no matter what there. But what if they had been born in January and had been in vitro when the vixens were brought into the U.S.? Would they have been live animals?
It doesn't sound like it because it starts at the point of...
But do we know? Because there's discussion that at law, depending on it, a life could, for beneficial purposes, be considered to start at quickening, the moment that it could live outside of the womb, or possibly at conception, but that civil rights don't apply until the moment of birth. Like, a person's not a person until they're born, at law, is the idea.
All right.
So if the vixens had been pregnant, that could have changed the outcome. And that would have put this judge in, like, a huge philosophical discussion.
Oh, my God.
About when does life begin for legal purposes? And that's been a debate in the legal world.
In other words, when they found out it was 51 days, this guy said, oh, thank God.
Yeah, but the thing is you can tell when you're reading this. And by the way, for everybody listening, as always, I'll be putting the cases up on Patreon when the episode releases so you can see this. But, like, this guy spins, like, 2-3 paragraphs waxing philosophical about the definition of life.
That's kind of
like you
amazing.
Kind of get the idea he wants to go into it. Like he wants to discuss this. He wants that, but then he's like, but you know what? After setting it all up, we don't need to go that far.
Nice.
Because the Department of Agriculture said that fox kits are born 2 months after their mama done fucked. And here they were born more than 2 months after they came into the U.S. So under no set of circumstances could we consider them alive.
Dude, I love that some guy just had to define life. And there was like, oh, wait, I don't. Oh, thank God.
All right, judges do that all the fucking time, though. Like, that is so common for a judge to just be like, you know what? I really want to talk about this really interesting thing that doesn't really apply here, but I'm not going to be able to. So I'm going to go ahead and do it anyways and then say it doesn't matter.
Okay. I love that. That's just their soapbox. I get it. I like a good soapbox.
So the summary sale and end of the day, the summary sale of all the foxes is denied. Okay.
Nice.
But it brings
what
up
the hell they do with them.
Like, I don't know, honestly. That's when I couldn't find out what happened. I'm assuming
U.S. Marshal got a fox. They had to take them home.
I'm assuming like the owner either got them out or the United States still has like foxes running around a customs warehouse in Seattle somewhere.
I truly want to believe that. Like the big one from Indiana Jones where they put the Ark of the Covenant, maybe they have guard foxes.
Like just one
fox. Let's look at the bright side of this. Guard foxes. And every 51 days they get more guard foxes.
So they do that. But as to the whelps, as to the baby foxes, the being furry trash, we all know the correct word for a baby fox is not pup or whelp. It's a kit. All right. Kit. K-I-T. Kit.
Kit.
Now, remember, the government seized these animals, and the U.S. Marshals are looking to sell them. All right?
All right.
Let me ask a question. They seized them based on live animal import, but the court just came back and said, well, wait a second. Those 20 kits, those weren't live animals at the time they came into the country.
Don't tell me they're saying that's not our responsibility and just released them into the wild or something.
They said the government can't keep them.
They were told to release them into the wild.
The government was told that as to the kits, the government had no power to hold them because they weren't live animals under the Tariff Act.
What do we know what they did with the kits?
We don't know.
Damn it!
They did deny the sale. So, like, this guy lied on an invoice with customs, got his foxes seized, and because the foxes fucked, the U.S. government took care of all of these foxes. And there's a chance that this guy just got, like, 20 free foxes out of the deal.
You know what? You know what? I choose to believe guard foxes in Indiana Jones's hangar. I choose to believe this. Tell me that's not the start of a great RPG.
Like, I'd love to know, by the way, if anybody finds what happened, email me at boozy@lawyersandliquor.com because I'd love to know. Oh, hell yeah,
I'm super interested too.
But yeah, no, that's the actual outcome of the case.
Outstanding, man. Outstanding.
But you see, it all goes on statutory interpretation. Live animals. What does that mean?
That's awesome. It's so cool that you guys do that.
In that case, live animals meant live at the time they were imported. And if the animal wasn't live at the time it was imported, the government had no right to seize the animal. So the kits had to be released. The 24 foxes that were brought in live, though, the government could still hold, but couldn't sale.
Love it.
And it's all about statutory interpretation. That's what it comes down to. What does it mean?
Well, apparently it means $1 million comma, and I appreciate that.
Right. And that is it. You know, I love the fact that I was going to call the episode Fox in the Hen House because, you know, we were talking about cock.
And we were talking about
foxes. But I like yours, foxes and coxes. So we're renaming the episode. Foxes and coxes.
I channeled my inner Zanny and actually came up with a good name for something.
But it does go into like specificity and drafting. Yeah, you have to draft it in a certain way to get a certain result in law. And if a court is inclined to read it a different way, they certainly can. You know, what does life mean? What does waste mean?
Fuck.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you have a very complicated, difficult job, and I'm going to keep laughing at you for having it.
But that is foxes and coxes.
Foxes and coxes.
And that said, that is Boozy's Legal Funhouse for this week. As always, if you like the shit we do, please feel free to support us over at patreon.com/lawyersandliquor. Go to your favorite podcast service of choice. Give us 5 stars. Don't care if you like us or not. You can leave a comment telling us to go fuck ourselves. We don't care. Like, we genuinely don't care. Just move us up the fucking chain. And Alkali, where can they find you all?
You can find us over on twitch.tv, Alkali and Zanny. We stream 4 times a week, Sunday morning brunch at 11:30 a.m. Central Time. And another fun one is Monday at 7, which is about to happen in 20 minutes here.
Yeah. So Alkali and Zanny over at Twitch. That is A-L-K-A-L-I and X-A-N-N-Y.
N-N-I. I almost said Z. I came so close to saying Z.
See, it's not that easy. I have to read it off my screen half the time.
I swear to God, it was about to be alkali and zany.
Yeah. No.
It really was. So that will do it for this episode of Boozy's Legal Funhouse. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you'll join us again in 2 weeks. I promise we'll actually do it in 2 weeks.
We should be good. We should be good.
But I am the Boozy Badger. Thank you, as always, to my legal layman, Alkali.
Thank you, my friend.
And until next time, you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Bye, everyone.